Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm David Latulli. This week for our Corona Radio Theater segment, a couple of performances and discussions with the director and founding director of The Marsh, Stephanie Weissman, and then we'll be having performances from Divine Madness, which starts off this new year of Marsh Dreams. Playwright Lynn Kaufman's fascinating work inspired by the true story of poet Robert Lowell and writer Elizabeth Hardwick, who were famously divorced when Lowell, who suffered frequent debilitating bouts of manic depression, left Hardwick after 23 years of marriage to marry an English heiress. We'll be hearing a performance from that work by Julia McNeil and Charles Shaw Robinson. Also, fitness trainer and soprano Candice Y. Johnson talks about her program, CJ's Fitness Sing, which combines physical activity with vocal training and is available free every Friday at The Marsh. We'll also be talking with folks from the Ross McKee Foundation, a tribute to pianist Robin Sutherland, who passed away this past December. Wonderful, gentle, giant principal pianist of the San Francisco Symphony. We'll be joined by the Ross McKee Foundation Executive Director, Nicholas Pakovic, and pianist Christopher Basso, and Lolly Lewis for a tribute to Robin Sutherland later this hour. Stay with us. Start off this edition of Open Air with our Corona Radio Theater segment. If you haven't tuned in, it's an initiative that we started as Corona took over our lives and gives an opportunity for actors and performers to do something live on the stage, the virtual stage of radio, taking us back to some old-time radio sometimes and offering new works as well. But giving a chance for performers to do what they do best, perform, instead of just talk about them. And I'm very pleased to welcome back our friends from The Marsh, Stephanie Weissman, who is the founder of The Marsh back in 1989, who sort of developed her own solo performances. In the first decade, she supported the development of thousands of new performances. And in 2006, a composer in her own right, she premiered her opera Aphrodisia, written for a 20-woman chorus, a chamber ensemble, solo performer, and dancer. Since then, she premiered Breed and Rescue, a solo performance about breeding and rescuing dogs and children. Currently working on another solo work, Planet Do-Re-Mi, which hopefully we'll hear a little bit more about. Stephanie, welcome back to Open Air.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and us.
Of course, The Marsh is quite an institution. Congratulations on its success, even in these difficult times. Tell us more about the Marsh Dream developments.
Well, we have had an incredible 9 months. We did over 500 shows in our first 9 months, 200 performers we supported, 75,000 plus viewers. We did the Marsh International Solo Fest, and we have every day we have a different show at 7:30 and some at noon, like Candice's Fitness Sing. So we've been busy, 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 busy. You want me to go through what's coming up or questions?
Let's see what's coming up, sure. But boy, no moss is growing under the rock that is The Marsh, that's for sure. No cobwebs in that theater.
Well, in the actual theater, maybe a few, but no, not in the virtual theater.
Right. Well, do share a little bit about what is coming up.
Well, okay. So tonight I have my own show. Finally, I get to interview people like you, David. So I have Stephanie's Marsh Dream. And tonight I, too, am interviewing the same subject people that you are. We have Lynn Kaufman, the playwright of Divine Madness, along with Charlie Robinson. And tonight Lynn is going to, I don't think, completely replace Julia, but we're going to get to hear Lynn do acting tonight. just for tonight, because the weekend Julia will be back on. So that's really exciting. So we get to hear more about that. And on Friday, we have Candace's Fitness Sing, which you'll hear more about. And Friday night, we have our weekly bingo series hosted by Josh Kornbluth. And I really want to be clear. This is not the bingo you may or may not be used to. It is improv bingo, and we have these incredible improvs that Josh does each time he rolls the crate and gets a bingo ball out. And each week we have a competition. So for anyone interested in joining us this week on Friday night, we have our competition this week is 46 words for the 46th president. So everybody can come up with up to, not exceeding, 46 words about our new president. And our host, David Harada, will decide which is the best one. And then you get a prize of a membership to the Marsh.
Wow.
That's on Fridays.
That's fantastic. And I'm glad it's not 45 words about the 45th president, because I think we wouldn't, first of all, we wouldn't be able to publish, broadcast it on radio, the 45 words I'm thinking of.
Exactly.
Much better to think ahead to 46 exactly. In the Biden administration and the incredible, incredible history making Kamala Harris as vice president.
Yes, from Oakland, where I am from, too.
And I'm looking forward perhaps to participate in bingo for I've heard about the bingo performances for some time, but I was looking for my dauber and I couldn't find it anywhere. So I guess I don't need it for virtual bingo, do I?
You don't need what? What were you looking for?
A dauber, you know, the ink thing that you'd make.
Oh, that thing. No. You could use your dauber, but we have this wonderful volunteer who did it all. It can all be done on your computer. You can download your bingo cards. You can put your dobby with your fingers through your computer. And then, you don't need anything except to be there. And then this weekend, of course, we have the fantastic Divine Madness happening on Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday at 2. And both days there will be a Q&A for the cast and the playwright after. Every Monday, there's the Monday Night Marsh. On Wildcard Tuesdays, it's wildcardish. And this particular Tuesday, we're having sound healing and restorative yoga event on Tuesday. But we also have Joshua Ral Brody and Beatles singing and Tell It on Tuesday. And then Wednesday, we have the Solo Arts Heal program, which is about arts and healing. And this week, it's Sam Simon, The Actual Dance, and that's about caregiving. And I'm just going to go back to mine, which you've already heard about, Stephanie's Marsh Dream, because next week, it's Daryl Van Leer, who's doing a performance excerpt from Mandela, Let Freedom Reign. I'll be interviewing Daryl, and then he'll be doing it on the weekend. And then the following week, because it's Valentine's Day, stay tuned for 45 coffee dates with Antonia Casper. So every week we have all these things with different people.
That's great. All happening at themarsh.org. Set a bookmark for that site. That's for sure. Something for everyone. Well, since you're going to be talking with Lynn Kaufman, the playwright, tonight, why don't you give us a little prelude of who Lynn Kaufman is and how you folks became acquainted?
Well, Lynn Kaufman is a fabulous playwright. She's been doing it a long time that she should be much older than she actually is. She's got so many plays. She's won the Will Glickman Award. Her plays have been done all over the country, at the Magic, all those things. But luckily, she's been doing a bunch, like once almost every year at the Marsh. And they've been incredible. We did Who Killed Sylvia Plath? Starring Laurie Holt, which just won actually our Marsh International Stream Festival's best show of the festival, along with Margaret Gomez's show. She did a show, Two Minds, about two Israeli psychologists that changed the world of economics and psychology. She did Acid Tests with Warren David Keith about Ram Dass. Am I missing anything here? Julia, do you know if I'm missing anything?
Oh, no fair. I've done several of Lynn's plays in the past, but not at the Marsh. She does gorgeous work, especially with deep, deep dives into a single character's life. And in this play, into these two extraordinary writers, the depths of their being, so that their characters get to talk a little while on stage and you really get to meet them. I love her work.
I do know her work because pre-COVID days, we had some folks on open air back in when we were just interviewing and not performing to talk about Lynn Acetest, about Ram Dass. I remember that was quite a show. So without further ado, then, let's hear an excerpt from Divine Madness. Here's Julia McNeil and Charles Shaw Robinson.
Another glorious day. I love it here. But it is starting to get cold. Time to get back to the city. I love it there, too. I love the contrast. Although, in truth, there's not that much of a difference. This town, Castine, Maine, is crawling with writers, editors, publishers, and poets. One poet, in particular, Robert Lowell, my ex. How do I feel about Cal being here after our 7-year divorce? Well, I can't exactly forbid it. I am not the mayor. And it hasn't been all that bad. He's good company and never could look after himself. And since I'm cooking anyway, what's another plate? Although people, our crowd, are talking. Writers call it character analysis, but it's gossip. Are we getting back together? Everyone has an opinion, just the same way everyone had an opinion when Cal and I were still married. It was reported to me that Mary McCarthy once said to Hannah Arendt, it would be better to let Cal be crazy once a year, be locked up, emerge penitent, than it is to have him subdued by drugs, living at home, like in a private zoo, with Lizzie as his keeper. But Lizzie prefers it that way. She enjoys the power she has over him when he is sick, drugged, and weak. Was that true? I don't know. Friends and non-friends had their theories. How did I stand it for so many years? Was I a masochist? An enabler? A saint?
Well, well, well. Will you look at that? Another dazzling display.
A constable sky.
And a Turner sea. I am so happy to be back.
At the old house?
With you. So many wonderful memories. Sailing, swimming, clam bakes, martinis.
Too many martinis.
I miss them.
Me too.
Just because I can't drink it doesn't mean that you have to deprive yourself.
I'm not deprived.
You just said you missed them.
One makes choices, Cal. That's my choice.
Lizzie, had I half your strength, half your discipline,
you'd be a critic.
I'd never be as good as you. Remember the first time we met at Yaddo?
We met before Yaddo at a cocktail party for the Partisan Review, but you were too famous to notice.
Look out for her, my friend Peter warned. Hardwick is a ball breaker. She savaged my book.
My review wasn't all that bad.
Oh, no? Peter Taylor's short stories are modest, corrigible. Who uses a word like corrigible?
It means...
I know what it means, but who uses it other than you? One longs for that large, early ugliness a young writer can well afford. A battle with the inexpressible. Large, early ugliness. A battle with the inexpressible.
You kept the review?
It's devastatingly well written. And the shock treatments have damaged my memory, you know that.
You seem to remember quite well what you want to.
But this time I want to get things exactly.
And why is that?
To make my case.
About?
Us.
I think you've already done that.
You mean the dolphin. That was 4 years ago.
The scars remain.
For me too?
Cal, we agreed not to talk about it.
Okay. Let's talk about something else. How did the work go?
2 pages.
On the novel?
Well, you can call it that. It's part essay, part journal, part memoir, part poem.
What's it about?
No plot. If I want a plot, I'll watch Dallas. In this book, I want to shift scenes and characters like a filmmaker, chronicle life with the blanks left in, ask unanswered, unanswerable questions.
Find resolution not in a full stop, but in a question mark.
Like a poem, Cal. Quick, offhand flashes, free from having to spell everything out brick by brick.
What are you calling it?
Sleepless Nights.
Will I be in it?
No, you will not. And you should have given me that choice.
I lost two, Lizzie. I lost our friends.
And won you a Pulitzer.
I regret it, Lizzie. I didn't realize the pain it would cause for you and Harriet.
You should have thought about that before you published it.
It was the only way I could process the whole thing.
The whole thing that you started.
I fell in love, Lizzie.
That's again.
That time was different. I fell in love when I was mad, became sane, and I was still in love.
With a woman crazy as you.
She has a wild side, but in some ways she's as strong and clear as you.
When I heard it was Caroline, I couldn't believe it.
It happened so fast. The same way I fell for you at Yaddo.
The same way?
Well, the attraction was irresistible, fated. I was married when I met you.
That marriage was over.
I made Jean crazy. I do that to women. I did that to Caroline.
Caroline was an alcoholic and a depressive before you married her.
I made it worse. Although those first 3 years were glorious.
I saw the photos in Vogue. A legendary beauty, 15 years younger than the illustrious poet, heiress to the Guinness fortune, seen here in her ancestral estate in Kent.
Oh, those buildings were a nightmare, Lizzie. Crumbling, rat-ridden, damp and cold.
But you fancied yourself landed gentry. Caroline came from more money and higher class than even a New England Lowell. Lady Caroline Sitkowitz, daughter of the Marquess and Marchioness of Dufferin and Ava, ex-wife of the painter Lucian Freud, ex-wife of composer Israel Sitkowitz, with whom she had 3 daughters. We're into it now. For whom you left your own daughter.
I saw Harriet whenever I could, but the other girls needed me too. Ivana was just 5 when she tripped on that boiling kettle. 4th-degree burns all over her body.
And you slept on the floor of her hospital room until you knew she would live.
I felt so guilty, Lizzie. The house was chaotic. The staff, negligent. The children lived in another wing. Some days we wouldn't even see them. We'd wake at noon from drunken, drug-fueled nights.
But you managed to write.
You told me I had to. That it was one thing to destroy the 2 people who loved me most in the world, but I was America's foremost poet. I could not forsake my work.
For your roots, you are New England, born and bred. People understand you here.
The English enjoy eccentrics as well.
But they didn't recognize when eccentrics became psychotic.
And you do.
I had 20 years of experience. Do you know what today is, Cal?
Sunday.
Our wedding anniversary. It would be our 28th, except for the 7-year break.
With Julia McNeil and Charles Shaw Robinson in an excerpt from Divine Madness, the true story of poet Robert Lowell and writer Elizabeth Hardwick by Lynn Kaufman, a new work by Lynn Kaufman, the author of some 20 full-length plays, several of which have been premiered and performed at the Marsh. Julia, a veteran of Bay Area theaters, including The Magic, ACT, Shotgun Players, Aurora Theater, SF Playhouse, and Marin Theater Company, among others, along with a good handful of TV and film credits. Charles Shaw Robinson has been seen also at these many local theater companies, as well as others across the country. And he's been featured as in the title roles of Hamlet in Cincinnati, Pericles in Baltimore, Scaramouche in Seattle, and The Rime of the Ancient Mariner here at Word for Word in San Francisco. Welcome once again to you both. And a wonderful excerpt. And as Julia mentioned, Lynn has a gift for really getting these characters life.
Yeah, and I just want to say I love Lynn's commitment to deeply intelligent characters. They make complex choices, and they have forgive my brilliance. That's why I need a playwright. They have a spiritual core often, right? Sylvia Plath, Ram Dass, these two amazing beings. And their commitment to what they care about in life just transcends life itself. It makes sense that Lynn is drawn to expressing them fully on the page.
Charles, other experience with Lynn's work?
Yes, I had a chance to direct one of her fledgling plays not too long ago. And again, it was, in that case, it was, an imagined world, but based on an actual event. It had to do with violence in high school kids and dealing with the aftermath of that. And like Julia, I admire the fact that she's attracted to issues and to people with big lives and asking big questions.
Well, we just heard an excerpt from Divine Madness. What else can we expect on the full length version?
Without giving anything away, I don't know if that's actually applies, but for me, this play is so much about, I posted this on Facebook, about these two beings who are facing love itself. That the kind of love that you can't turn away from, and it doesn't depend on everything going perfectly, and things really went very not perfectly in this couple's life, and he wrote this whole book about it and just put it out in public. But the depth, I just want to, there's a quick quote from Elizabeth Hardwick that I adore that to me kind of says it. She says to him, "If you need me, I'll always be there. And if you don't need me, I'll always not be there."
Interesting. Marsh.org for the Marsh stream of the full version of Divine Madness by Lynn Kaufman, starring Julia McNeil and Charles Shaw Robinson. Thank you much for sharing that excerpt.
Thank you.
Well, also at the Marsh is something unique on Fridays. In addition to bingo with Josh Kornbluth, you can get your voice ready to shout bingo by attending Candace Johnson's class. Candace has been praised by Opera News for her vocal clarity, dramatic presence, and expressive interpretation, and has concertized widely, including guest appearances at Carnegie Hall and the Manhattan Center. She earned her doctorate in voice performance from the University of Michigan and is on the music faculty at UC Berkeley, where she teaches voice classes and specializes in the research and performance of classical works by African American composers. Her show at the Marsh, or class at the show, is called CJ's Fitness Sing, and it's a pleasure to welcome Candace to Open Air. Hi.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
Well, this sounds right up my alley. I think I'm going to attend one of these. I need to get my voice back in shape and a little bit of fitness as well, getting all cooped up here.
I heard you doing your warm-ups a little bit. I was doing mine too.
Yeah, those are good. As well as stretching the jaw. And,
that's right.
smiley face and frowny face. So do you go through warm-ups like that in the class as well? Or tell us what would we expect at a CJ's Fitness Sing?
So I would say first, you would expect to have a lot of fun. I'm excited about the community that we are building with CJ's Fitness Sing. So every class period, we have some warm-up session. And during that warm-up, we are not just warming up the voice, but we're also warming up the body. So sometimes it's a little bit of just calisthenics, jumping jacks, doing some squats, and I try to make sure that we have some modifications because we have, you know, people at different levels of physical fitness engagement. So we do the warm-ups, and then we do some technical work that incorporate the warm-ups, and then we eventually get to singing a song. So we learn a song. Usually each class period, we learn an entire song, and we do it by rote. And I think it's a, you know, learning by rote is a great way to validate the importance of listening, you know, learning orally.
Great brain exercise as well, yes. That's for sure. Keeps you fit. Do you incorporate some of this movement in your teaching at UC Berkeley as well?
Not so much. So I do have students. I'm a very physical teacher. So singing is a physical feat. So if a student is having problems getting their voice to fly freely, the breath is not moving forward, maybe they're just bogged down with the mental thought of, oh, this is hard, or, oh, here comes the high note. So what I do is try to engage the body in a way to sort of distract the mind so that the body can actually sing as efficiently as it really knows how to.
That's the idea, I'm sure. And where did you get your inspiration from in terms of mentors and teachers?
Lots of mentors and teachers. So I grew up in the South and started singing in a small Black Baptist church. It was like the stage. Not only just a place to train spiritually, but also a place to train your artistry. So I sang in the choir, I sang solos, and, somebody said, "Will you, who wants to sing this song for Easter? Who wants to sing it?" And my hand shot up, you know, before I even realized my hand was shooting up. And, "Okay, Candace, now, come on here. You gonna sing the song now." And my mom was, saying, "Well, you don't know this song. What are you doing?" But my mom ended up being my first vocal coach, not having any training whatsoever herself, but she had a wonderful instinct for the natural way the voice can move. And then I went on to study with my first formal voice teacher, who was at an HBCU, like the Morehouse, like the Howard University, but this was in my small hometown of Jackson, Tennessee, Lane College. William Garcia was my first voice teacher, and he said something so profound that I didn't quite understand until many years later. I was trying to do what he was asking me. He said, "Okay, Candace, now I want you to put your sound in the mask." And, he's doing all these faces and saying, "In the mask." And I'm trying to do it. It's not working. And he says, "Can you just sing the way I heard you singing the spiritual?" And I said, "Oh, okay." And I just kind of went back into my, church mind and said, "Were you there when they crucified my Lord? Were you there?" "Oh, that's it, Candace, that's it. Now that's what you should do. You see, your natural is classical." Ah, my natural, and I'm just thinking, my natural is classical? I don't even really know what classical is, and do Black people sing classical music, but he was the first one to really open my mind and just begin to give me the repertoire that I needed that suited my voice. So I tried to sing Aretha, and it didn't work. I sang my version of Whitney Houston, and it sort of worked, but nothing really was fitting my voice like this other batch of music that I was being given, the Handel, the Mozart. So that helped me prepare for auditions at Vanderbilt University, did my undergrad work there, got married, moved to the Midwest, and ended up attending a regional school for my master's. And then my goal was, can I get to Michigan? Because it had one of the top schools in the country. Right, Bill Bolcom, right? So I just worked really hard and had some teachers who were constantly giving me this new way of looking at my voice. One person said, you're singing on the principal when you really should be singing on the interest. You're working way too hard. And then I had a wonderful mentor, Dr. Willis Patterson, not only give me some good voice lessons, but he started introducing me to this repertoire that met the need of my voice in a physiological way. Like, I needed to be able to sing something that was more in the classical sphere, but it had all of the lush harmonies of jazz and gospel, and that was the Black American art song repertoire. So just, you know, beginning to take on these bits and pieces of information that wonderful people were giving me. And then finally, when I worked on the doctorate at the University of Michigan, I was in Shirley Verrett's studio, the incomparable late Shirley Verrett. And more than being a maverick and an international opera diva, she was a nurturer. And she taught me how to pay very close attention to my voice. She taught me how to hear the voice and to hear the vocal faults and to hear the potential and to know when I'm singing Brahms like a spiritual and when I'm singing a spiritual like Brahms, and you know how to make all of these things that were in my background and in my voice come together in one body.
Fantastic. And now you mentioned that as part of the fitnessing, a new song is learned each week. Is this from a variety of genres? Do you delve into the classical as well as the pop and the jazz? Or?
Oh, yes. So, you know, because the Black repertoire is so important to me, we do some spirituals, the Negro spirituals. We do some pop. We do some stuff from the 60s and 70s. We do musical theater. And I try to have the participants give me ideas for other songs that they would like to learn. At first, I was just coming up with stuff off the top of my head, you know, trying to cover different genres. But then I found out it was much more enjoyable to get the others involved in that process.
Very nice. Something for everyone. Once again, at the breeding ground and wonderful resource that is The Marsh, themarsh.org. Noon on Fridays, every Friday for CJ's Fitness Inc. Candace, not a stranger to The Marsh. You're one-woman show, Vox in a Box, was at UC Berkeley and then part of a Marsh Rising back in 2019.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, Stephanie. That was the beginning of a wonderful working relationship that's been fostered since then with Stephanie. And we continue to workshop Vox in a Box so that I continue to develop the characters and... Now I'm beginning to see spinoffs from Vox in a Box. I have another potential show that I'm working on called This Little Light, which delves more into my experience in the church. You know, The Marsh is just such a rich resource for us here in the Bay.
Nice. And once again, CJ's Fitness Sing is at The Marsh, themarsh.org for more information. Check it out tomorrow at noon. Thanks so much for coming in, Candace.
Thank you.
Well, some music next, and we're going to hear from the wonderful Robin Sutherland, both in voice and in sound. A fantastic pianist. We lost him at the age of 69 from a brain tumor back in December. Let's hear Robin performing the music of Brahms, and then we'll talk with folks from the Ross McKee Foundation about an upcoming tribute concert.
Thank you.
music of Johannes Brahms, his Opus 79 Rhapsody, number one, performed by the late, great Robin Sutherland. So sad to lose this gentle giant of the piano, and a gentleman who you'll hear shortly from in recorded form, his voice, who had one item on his resume, that of pianist with the San Francisco Symphony. Amazing performer, and got to know him a little bit as well. And we're going to get to know him a little bit more, some of his music this hour, with some guests from the Ross McKee Foundation. Nick Pavkovic is the executive director of the Ross McKee Foundation. He's a gifted composer and pianist in his own right. Nick, welcome to you. I understand that you also had a work commissioned by Robin.
Thank you, David. Nice to be here. Yes, I did. Robin entered my life while I was a student at the conservatory and was very, very gracious and generous with his time working with me. And just after I graduated, he commissioned a work for himself and his husband, Carlos Ortega, who's a clarinetist. And I wrote them a three-movement work called Volante, which has a lot of influences, including some Latin influences and influences because I know Robin loves French music. And he was very pleased to premiere that at the Breckenridge Music Festival in 2012.
Nice. Well, before we get into more about Robin and his music, tell us a little bit about the Ross McKee Foundation. Who was Ross McKee?
Ross McKee was a fixture of the Bay Area music community in the middle of the last century. He started a school, the Ross McKee School for the Musical Arts, in Pacific Heights in 1939, and he was a pianist. This was sort of a counterpart to the conservatory at that point. And it went on until his death in 1987. And then it was decided that the legacy of the school and the real estate would be folded into a foundation. And that's when the Ross McKee Foundation was born. And we're around to support piano performance in the Bay Area, really piano culture in general, in many, 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 many different ways. We have a grant program. So if a small organization wants to present a pianist, they can come to us for funding. We also have scholarships at the Conservatory in San Francisco State and the Community Music Center. And we have a long-running piano competition for high school students.
Nice. And the whole Friday series at 5 p.m. kicks off with a tribute to Robin Sutherland on February 5th. And then after that, there's quite a lineup of Fridays coming up. Ryan Shang on the 12th, Antonio Iturrioz on the 19th, a piano talk with Mark Ainley, the author of the wildly popular Facebook group, The Piano Files. He'll give an introduction to historical piano recordings with a focus on why they matter on the 26th of February. Robert Schwartz also featured in March, Solomon Gee, as well as Christopher Basso, who's joining us by Zoom as part of this presentation as well, doing works of Shostakovich and Beethoven. The list goes on, including Gil Kalish and my good friend Ken Isaka in April, and the series continues until May 7th. Information at rossmckeefoundation.org. Joined, as I mentioned, by a pianist, Christopher Basso. Christopher, welcome to you. Your performances
Hello, David.
Have been heralded as riveting with a multidimensional array of colors and shapes. Tell us about your association with Robin.
I miss Robin every day. I met Robin in 1978 when I first came to the Conservatory of Music to do my undergraduate degree. I left San Francisco and came back in 2002 and resumed my friendship with him. And when the conservatory moved to the Civic Center in 2006, our friendship really took off because he was two blocks away at Davies Symphony Hall. We were lunch partners for up until I saw Robin in August. That was the last time I saw him, and we had lunch. And he came over to the Community Music Center where I teach. And Robin he was my pal, and it was a real treat to get to know him very, very well. And we were music partners. I would play for him. I was always intimidated to play for him. But before I would do a performance, I would usually run some of the music by Robin, and always got, in very few words, a lot of insight in and suggestions from him. He never said you were doing something wrong. He just would, pinpoint either little rhythmic inaccuracies or something about color, and but usually just those couple very succinct remarks sort of brought a whole new dimension to the piece, and I will miss that.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I'd hope to perform with him myself. Whenever we would meet at the symphony or on the street, even he said we should play the Poulenc sometime together.
Exactly. He loved his French music.
Tell us what you're going to be contributing on the tribute concert on the 5th.
Well, I'm playing the last of the Schubert Moments Musicaux, the A-flat musical moment, number 6. This is one of the pieces that I played for Robin. I performed an all-Schubert program at the conservatory probably 8 years ago, I guess. And I played the Moments Musicaux for him, and there are just small it has Robin written all over it, actually. It was a real treat to pull them back out and work on that 6th Moments Musicaux. I just recorded it last night at Robin's house on Robin's piano, and it was it was tough, you know, because as you'll see when the video, when the program is presented, there's Robin all over the place. And it was very emotional for me.
Yeah. And his tribute in the Chronicle back in when Josh Cosman wrote the brief tribute obituary for him, he mentioned something that MTT said, and I'll quote this: "He effortlessly combined elegant virtuosity, championship of new music, ideal chamber music performances, and inspiring teaching." I also didn't know that he was a master of the French and Hawaiian languages. Michael goes on, he was a great wit and storyteller, a treasure trove of esoteric knowledge, amusing anecdotes, and outrageous jokes. What a spirit that we lost in Robin Sutherland.
We sure did. We sure did. He juggled all of those things. He knew exactly how to act around a huge array of different personalities. And he, like MTT said, he effortlessly could go from one to the other. And he would, on one hand, in one breath, speak with an incredible eloquence, and then in the next breath, just some outrageous joke, you know. So, and he consistently put a smile on my face.
I should also mention an anecdote from my friend and fellow host here at KLW, the wonderful pianist Sarah Cahill, who knew Robin and saw him at the ticket booth for a Soundbox production. For which it's adults only. I have to be 21 or older to be admitted to the Soundbox. And Sarah had brought her not quite 21-year-old daughter Miranda to see the performance, and they were so disappointed that they couldn't get in. And she mentioned this to Rob, and said, and he just, you know, he had, with a little glint in his eye, he said, "Follow me." he took them backstage and in the back way to Soundbox so Miranda and Sarah could both enjoy the performance. That's just the kind of spirit that that guy had.
Sounds just like Robin, yeah. That's something that Robin would do.
Let me bring into the conversation Lolly Lewis, who has been producing music in San Francisco since 1980 and has worked as an audio engineer and producer at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music and the Aspen Music Festival, as well as through her own production company, Transparent Recordings. She has also been producing workshops for amateur musicians for the San Francisco Symphony's Community of Music Makers project from 2011 to 2016, and founded the Amateur Music Network to continue to support the musical community in these times of COVID. The network is now presenting online workshops and conversations desired designed to encourage musical connection. Lolly, welcome to you.
Thank you, David. Nice to be here.
Obviously, you have the connection of the conservatory with Robin. How did you get to know this gentle giant?
Well, I was walking through the conservatory lobby one day in about 1981, and I had known Robin. You know, everybody who meets Robin feels like immediately like you're his best friend. So I was one of those. But he called out the name of a tiny boarding school I went to in Colorado for 1 year. And the class that I graduated from, and it turns out we both went to the same, you know, 120 student school. And so we became very fast friends. I never knew him there because I was only there as a freshman. He came as a junior, but we were in the same class at Colorado Rocky Mountain School. So we became fast friends. And on many occasions, I even went back to Colorado with him. I recorded the Telluride Chamber Festival, which he was one of the co-directors, and recorded him on several occasions at our school in Carbondale, Colorado. And in fact, in 2019, which feels like last year now because we're skipping a year, right? I heard him perform a beautiful piece by Nick Pavkovic at the Redstone Castle, this gorgeous arts and crafts home up in the mountains. It's the last time I heard Robin play, as a matter of fact. He played a concert up there.
Very nice. And what is your role in the tribute?
I am not directly involved in the tribute, except to support it in any way that I can. And my connection with Nick is really through Robin. I heard that clarinet piece. Wasn't that performed at the conservatory also? At a concert that both Nick and Chris played with Robin. So I just have, I have made these wonderful connections with Robin through the years that have really been primary and meaningful for me. And, you know, it's interesting because I know Robin thought of me as his recording producer, and I did a lot of recording with him, but really he didn't care a bit about that. He had one recording project that meant the world to him, which was his Goldberg Variations. And it's out of print. We're trying to get it back in print. And I, you know, there are a lot of concert recordings, but basically he recognized that playing live is what music is all about. So it's ironic to feel like I'm Robin's recording producer when in fact, you know, that wasn't at all the part of being a performer that he cared about. So,
well, we do have some Bach performed by Robin. Tell us about the excerpt that we're going to hear.
This is actually an arrangement of Bach, and I don't have in my notes what the piece is. Nick, you might, or Chris, you might remember it, but this is arranged by an incredibly great pianist named Earl Wild. And Robin had these connections with amazing artists of the previous generation, and Earl Wild was one of these. So this is an arrangement I recorded at Robin's house. Golly, has to be in the late 90s.
Terrific. Well, anyway, let's hear a little bit of it now. Earl Wild / Johann Sebastian Bach is performed by Robin Sutherland.
Thank you.
Music of Johann Sebastian Bach and an arrangement by Earl Wilde, the late, great Robin Sutherland performing on his own piano in that performance. We will be greatly missed. Nick Pavkovic, let's talk a little bit more about how this tribute concert took shape. Robin touched so many lives. I imagine it was a challenge to keep people off the program that might have been interested in participating. So who else is involved? I see that Jeffrey Gahane is also going to be there. We just heard from Christopher Basso, his contribution. How did the program come together itself? You're going to host the show.
Yes, I am. It was, we didn't make any attempt to fully represent all of the people that Robin had touched. There would be no way to do that. But obviously, I worked with Robin. One of our board members, Elizabeth Dorman, who's playing, had also worked with Robin. She was the youth orchestra pianist, and he was her coach. And then she bugged him for years to coach her on Bach as well. So she's actually playing a little bit of Bach. Keisuke Nakagoshi, I believe Robin came to know him when he was a student at the conservatory, and then he played many times alongside Robin at the symphony. Britt Day is the son of Tim Day, flute player, and also a conservatory student who worked with Robin on many occasions. And Mark Shapiro was Robin's right-hand man in the piano department, the symphony, for many, many, many years. Everybody has a very personal connection to Robin in one way or another.
Some 45 years with the San Francisco Symphony, an amazing career, and he was so happy to be here. In fact, let's hear Robin himself talk about his extraordinary life and a bit of a biography here from a YouTube presentation that he did for the San Francisco Symphony.
There is this quote from Oscar Wilde. It is an odd thing, but anyone who disappears is said to have been seen at San Francisco. It must be a delightful city possessing all the charms of the next world. I got here in the fall of 1972. I always look at the Transamerica Pyramid and say they built that building the year I arrived. To a young man coming out, this was very well known as a friendly, safe place to be. It was a good matrix for me at that time in my life. I never have known a time in my life when I was not interested in music. I learned to read music long before I learned how to read words on the printed page. I always had a friend there, and the friend seemed always to be sitting right here. And that friend was music for me. This job of mine, the principal pianist for the San Francisco Symphony, is the only job I've ever had. When this job was born for me in 1973, I certainly did not have any inclination that I would be sitting here 44 seasons later with the thinnest job resume in the world. I've had four music directors, Seiji Ozawa, Edo DeVart, Herbert Blumstead, and now Michael Tilson Thomas, completely different in temperament, in personalities, and in their own way, they were united toward one goal, which was the betterment of the San Francisco Symphony. What we have here is an orchestra that reflects the personality of its city. The San Francisco Symphony has definitely been a rock for me, a rock also for the community it finds itself in. I'm right where I want to be. I'm right where I need to be. So crazy about. I'm very thankful. This is so cool. This is what's next. What's going to be next?
from the SanFranciscoSymphony.org, that wonderful portrait of the late, great Robin Sutherland. What will be next? Well, sadly, you lost him on December 18th, a brain tumor. And we're all the lesser for it. What a wonderful, gentle giant. A tribute to Robin will be on February 5th, starting off the Ross McKee Foundation's Spring 2021 virtual season. Among the performers, my guest, Christopher Basso, as well as Britt Day, Elizabeth Dorman, Jeffrey Kahan, Jeffrey Latour, Kasuke Nakagoshi, and Mark Shapiro, all hosted by the director of the Ross McKee Foundation, Nick Pavkovic. Nick, Christopher, Lolly, thank you so much for sharing a little bit of your experience with Robin.
Thank you, David. Thank you.
Let's go out with one of my favorite works for piano that Robin recorded. This is The Graceful Ghost Rag by composer William Bolcom. Afraid that's all the time we have for The Graceful Ghost Rag. My thanks to Lolly for coming through with that at the very last minute. And thank you for listening to Open Air. Join me again next week at this same time. This is 91.7 KALW.